Good evening to everybody. Thank you so much for the wonderful invitation and the warm welcome. You have the zechus of having a very wonderful, sweet, and talented rabbi in Rabbi Schreier, and it's always a pleasure to share Divrei Torah with him and to learn with him together. Let's begin. With Rabbi Schreier's permission, I'm not going to speak on the parsha. I'm going to speak on something related to this evening, which is Tu B'Shvat. Tonight and tomorrow is Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, which I think for most Jews who don't know much about Tu B'Shvat, they kind of view it as Jewish Arbor Day, something to do with trees and nature and things like that. Now, that's not really what Tu B'Shvat is about, but because many people do associate Tu B'Shvat with some sort of celebration of nature and trees and vegetation and growth, what I want to talk tonight about is the role of nature in Judaism and how we relate as observant and God-fearing Jews to participating in Hashem's nature and viewing nature, viewing Teva through a Jewish lens. And in order to get there, I want to come through a circuitous path, and I'd like to discuss a little bit of fascinating Jewish history. And you have all the source sheets in front of you. You have an image of a gentleman on the page before you. And that man, we're going to talk about in a moment, but first we need a little bit of English Jewish history. About 300 years ago, in London, a Rabbi David Nieto, now in Hebrew it's Nun Yud Tes Vav, but in the Spanish it's Nieto, N-E-I-T-O. He was accused of teaching heresy in a drasha that he gave in shul. Apikorsis, kfira, being taught from the pulpit in shul. But in order to understand the event properly, we need a little bit of historical background. On the 9th of Av in 1290, Edward, the King of England, expelled all of the Jews from England. And this brought an end to centuries of Jewish community in England. And for the most part, there was no Jews formally. There were Jews in England that stuck around, but no formal Jews living in England for the next 350 years. Jews began to return to England during the days of Menashe ben Yisrael, who was a friend of Oliver Cromwell, who at one time was head of the English army and later head of state. Over a few meetings, Rav Menashe ben Yisrael was able to convince Oliver Cromwell to allow all the Jews to return to England. And in 1655, the Jewish people returned to England. Included in that initial group were 300 Sephardi Jews who began a new community in London. They mostly came from Amsterdam and Livorno, Italy. Soon after, they were joined by crypto-Jews, Muranos, Jews had to hide during the Inquisition, who came from Portugal. And the community became known as the Spanish-Portuguese community. That's where the title comes from. The shul that's in Manhattan, the Spanish-Portuguese, those fit together because of that event. In 1658, they were able to build the first shul in London. And after the success of the founding of this new community, many other Jews began to move to London as well. This included Jews from Ashkenaz, no, formerly Germany, mostly escaping Russia. And in 1690, they built the first Ashkenazi shul in London. Nevertheless, the dominant community in England at that time was the Spanish-Portuguese community, and the Sephardic community pretty much ran the show. They would gather to daven in the Beis HaKnesses Shar HaShemayim, which that structure does not exist anymore, but eventually they would build a new shul, which still stands to this day, in what is called the Beavis Marx Synagogue, that still remains in London. Now, after the community was formed, and they had a proper Beis HaKnesses, a proper shul, they invited Rabbi David Nieto of Livorno to become the Chacham, the Jewish spiritual leader of their Kehila. A little bit about Rabbi Nieto. You see a picture of him there. He looks like pretty much any picture of an English man during that time. He looks like a man of the world. Perhaps not your usual view of what a rabbi would look like, but he was a classically trained rabbi in the Italian form. Rabbi David Nieto was born in Venice in 1654. He was a student of Rav Shmuel Abuhav, who was the rabbi of Venice and author of the Dvar Shmuel, an important work of responsa. He was eventually given smicha, along with the general scientific knowledge that he gained from studying in the University of Padua, and he would eventually receive a medical degree as well. He was an expert in the field of astronomy, mathematics. He also spoke and wrote in many, many languages. And after his marriage, he lived in Livorno, where he served as the dayan of Livorno, the darshan as well, who would give drashos, and the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Reishis Chachma. Certainly a very, very talented, respected Talmud Chacham. And he was also, on top of that, a doctor in the community. So he pretty much had everything going for him. He was a remarkable gentleman. Now, the Spanish-Portuguese community of London was growing, and they asked Rabbi David Nieto to come and to serve as their chacham. And the role of the chacham is to be the rabbi, the teacher, the spiritual leader of the community. One of the central jobs that the chacham was to give were the drushos, the speeches. And this was explicitly noted in the contract. In addition, he wasn't allowed to practice medicine anymore, and instead he had to give all of his time, energy, and focus to his kehillah. He arrived in London, Erev Rosh Hashanah, 1702, for the Chanukah Sabbais of the Bavis Marks Synagogue. He threw all of his skills and efforts into the community right away. And amongst the Jews of the Spanish-Portuguese community, there were Anusim, people who had been hidden crypto-Jews, and he spent much of his effort making sure that they were learning and practicing Judaism properly, because for many, many years, their families did not know how to practice Judaism properly. Rav Dov Nieto was a fantastic darshan. However, one of the drushas that he gave in his shul almost led to his excommunication and created a storm in London which almost tore the community apart. Let's talk about this drusha. This drusha was given on Parshas Vayeshev 1704, and he gave a drusha essentially saying that Hashem is nature, is the Teva, and nature is Hashem. And they are all the same. There's no power in nature that doesn't come from Hashem. Hashem runs the world. And without going into the specifics of the philosophical implications, we will simply state that this is something that we take for granted nowadays. People often point out that the gematria of the word Hateva, Hey Tes Beis Ayin, is the same gematria as Elokim, Aleph Lamed Hey, Yud Mem. They're both 86. Hashem and Teva, nature and Hashem, are one. And certainly, after the spread of Kabbalah, it has become even more accepted. Rav Moshe Cordovero, in his Pardes Ribonim, the Shlach HaKadosh, also speaks about this idea. And within Hasidus, this is an idea that we find all the time, that nature is where Hashem reveals himself to the world. The Toldos Yaakov Yosef, Rav Yaakov Yosef of Polnoi, the Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, mentions a number of times and uses it to explain a number of psukim by showing how nature and God are one in the same. However, at that time and at that place, the very concept and saying the expression Elokim v'hateva, v'hateva v'elokim, that God and nature and God are one, was not so popular. Because there were also schools of philosophy that heretically taught that the world is run by forces of nature, or what we'll call pantheism, that everything is nature everywhere, and that nature is essentially God. And that was a bit controversial, and it was very sensitive, because just a few years before, there was a man named Spinoza, who had taught heretical ideas that also seemed to mix nature and God into one, and to confuse the two. And Spinoza was placed in Cheirem by the community in Amsterdam, and that was a big controversy as well. So people were very sensitive to this idea, saying that nature and in gravity and in physics and in the stars and the sky and the grass and the flowers, is God is found. And it was a very, very sensitive point. Right after the drasha was given, literally after he stepped down from the bima, people began complaining that Rav Dov Nieto was teaching the thought of Spinoza. And Rav Yaakov Emden, in his Megillas Sefer, which is his autobiography, which is a fascinating discussion all on its own, one of the few rabbis who wrote an autobiography. So he writes at this time, but we'll see in a moment why Rav Yaakov Emden might have an inside understanding to what we're about to discuss. He writes that at that time, there were already people in London who did not like Rav Dov Nieto before the drasha. And they were searching to find something that they could pin on him in order to have him removed. And they found this drasha was exactly what the doctor ordered. It was perfect. Something controversial. We can kick the rabbi out. We're going to run with this. Now, to be historically honest, at the time of these events, Rav Yaakov Emden was around 6 or 7 years old. So he couldn't have known any of this firsthand. It's probably something that he must have known from something that he heard later on. Nevertheless, this comment doesn't contradict the facts on the ground. It could be that the first people to speak against Rav Dov Nieto were his opponents. But soon after this drasha, the controversy pulled all the other people in the community in as well. The complaint of heresy began to be accepted by many in the Kehillah. Because the controversy of Rav Nieto happened, he printed a pamphlet explaining his position. It was written in Spanish and was titled De la Divina Providencia. It was about Hashem's providence in the world. If read literally, it almost seemed like an apology for what he said, but there was no real apology here. Rather, it was an explanation and a re-examination of what he had said in the drasha. But the pamphlet had the opposite effect. Instead of calming down the fire, it just added more machlokas, and it spread further. And now with the opponents of Rav Nieto, there were communal leaders as well. One of the dayanim, one of the judges, the Jewish judges in the community, came out against him, and he was fired. And there was seemingly no one who could bring calm to this fight, who could clarify, did the rabbi teach heresy or did the rabbi teach Torah? No one could decide for sure. No one knew what to do. And at the height of the machlokas, one of the leaders of the community refused to attend the wedding because Rav Nieto was being Masadar Kedushin, and he didn't want to be in the same space as this kofar, as this heretic. And he continued that the rabbi was certainly a kofar, and any Beis Din in the world would agree. And then he went one step further. This guy had a lot of guts. And he said if it turned out that he was incorrect about the rabbi, he would pay a fine that equaled the yearly salary of the rabbi. The communal leadership responded firmly, and the man was kicked out of the shul. And soon the matter reached the London government, with people asking the government to get involved. And we know very well, when Jews need to turn to the government to get involved in their problems, nothing comes out good. Now, people began to understand at this time that only a Beis Din could solve this issue. However, the London Beis Din didn't want to put the rabbi on trial. That was very awkward. And those from Amsterdam who had come to London said, let's turn to the Beis Din of Amsterdam, and they should review the issue. However, the wealthy Jews of London rejected this plan because they felt they were the sovereign community, and they didn't need to follow the advice of Amsterdam and other communities, especially when so many of their membership came from Amsterdam, it was almost going to seem like they were reaching back and breaking up the community. However, at a certain point, there was really nothing left to do. There was nothing left to be done. And the community agreed to turn to an impartial judge, the great Rav Tzvi Ashkenazi, the Chacham Tzvi, the rabbi of Altona, who, for our purposes, was the father of Rav Yaakov Emden, who told us before about the controversy. Everyone in Western Europe knew and respected the opinion of the Chacham Tzvi. You all know who the Chacham Tzvi is, because you all know his opinion about keeping 2 days in Eretz Yisrael. Nobody knows anything about the Chacham Tzvi except that. So tonight, at least you're going to know two tshuvas from the Chacham Tzvi going forward. The one you already know is that the Chacham Tzvi says that you can keep 1 day in Eretz Yisrael when you come from Galus. That's one you all know. Even if you didn't know you knew it, you already know. You already knew it. And the other tshuva you're going to know now. So you'll be able to brag to your friends that going forward, you know not one, but two responsum from the Tzvi Ashkenazi. So with everyone's agreement, they sent the question to the, was their rabbi a heretic? To the Chacham Tzvi. And we're going to learn in a moment, with the sources in front of you, the psak of the Chacham Tzvi. They sent a letter to Tzvi Ashkenazi with the issue at hand, and there was no debate over what was said. That was not the question. Rather, the question was the meaning of what was said. And therefore they sent a copy of the drush along with the pamphlet so that he could decide whether the whole thing was pusel or not, and whether the rabbi was a heretic or a Talmud Chacham. The psak was written on the 17th of Av, 1705. It would be printed later in London in a special pamphlet, but today we're going to read from the Tshuvas Chacham Tzvi in Simen Yud Ches. By the way, anytime, please feel free to chime in with any particular questions. Let's review the tshuva in front of you. It is not that difficult. It's not a difficult tshuva, but it is. There are some things we need to read through. Let's begin. The Zeh Toref Hashela Sam. This is basically the gist of your question, he says. Hachacham Hamaromein Benale, the great exalted rabbi. Now, I think we can tell by the introduction where this shuv is going to be going. He says, Hachacham Hamaromein Benale, the great exalted rabbi, Moreno Rav Dovin Nieto, Av Basin Umorit Tzedek, the rabbi and the leader of the Kal Kadosh Shari Shemaim, gave a drush in the Beis HaKnesses, Darajda Toaro, Mu'utak Miloshon La'az Lushonenu HaKadosha, and you have transcribed it to me from your language into Hebrew so I can read it. Omrim, Shamarti b'yeshiva shehashem yisparach v'ateva. You have said that Hashem and the nature, v'ateva v'hashem yisparach hakolecha, nature and God, God and nature are all one. Omer ani shekach amarti v'ani b'kaimo, I say that I fulfilled v'achrisenu ma'achar shedavar ha-melech m'kaimo b'mizmor. He says, David HaMelech says this as well. Hamechaseh shemayim ba'avim, hameichim la'aretz matar, hamatzmiach harim chatzir. Look in Tehillim and Kuf Mem Zayin, we say every single morning the Halukas, that Hashem is found in the heavens and in the clouds and in the rain and the grass. Aval tzarech li'eda, but you must know, hatuaz nechem yehudim mipnei shehu ha'ikar harishon, b'mun ha'sein, that you must know, sheshem tevahu, he says the word teva is actually not a Hebrew word. It's a new word that was added after Tanakh. The word teva for nature doesn't exist. Hashem is the one who causes the wind to blow. Hashem is the one who makes it rain. Hashem does all these matters. That which we call nature is just another word for God. There's no nature in the world. Teva, the word teva in Hebrew, nature, is just another word for hashkacha, Hashem running the world. This is what I mean, that God and nature, and nature and God are one. Deazuhu yishara chasida kadosha. This is a proper, righteous, holy approach. Vasher lo yaminu ba him kraim apikorsim. And whoever doesn't believe in this, that God and nature are one, is an apikoris, a heretic. Adkan, that's pretty much what the drasha says. V'yishalenu orin lo mar kisar v'dibar al Hashem. And this, people say this is heresy. V'zeu she'amarti she'ashkacha shu oso adavar. And now which I said that hashkacha of Hashem is the same thing, she'achronim karim teva, which people call teva, hu elokim is God. Ritzoni she'ashkacha so yisparach v'hu yisparach hakolecha. What I'm saying is that Hashem's control of the world, and Hashem is all one. Both in Sharasisi Laharosa Anashim, that I want people to know, Ulazhirim, Bal Yarvu Maisa Shemisparchi Maisa Teva Prati. Don't confuse the Hashkach of Hashem, the actions of Hashem, with natural actions. Mipnesha Anashim Omrim Shatevahu Hamorid Hagasham Mamorid Talim. People think that, no, it's nature that's causing rain, it's nature that causes the dew to fall. For David HaMelech of Hashem, Chachmenu Zal, and David and our rabbis teach us, Shelukim Shu Osa Kolelu. No, no, no. When it rains in the morning and it snows and the sun is shining and there's a beautiful mountain and a gorgeous river, it's all God. And now which I say that God is nature, Ritzoni Bishvil Oso Adavar Shuha Mashkiach Osa Kol, Vanashim Badu Milubam Omer Shatevahu Osa. He says people make a mistake. People think that there's natural occurrences in the world that are beautiful, and God is just off to the side. And therefore, he says, "Umasha marzi shalimud zehut tzadik v'yasher." This is correct. Ani machrichu makaimu mechadesh shemimenu v'nirin shakadosh v'ozan mafarnes olam. That Hashem sustains and gives everything to the world. V'lo ka'osan hanosim kvod la'achar u'michyachsim pulos elu l'teva. And it's not like people who say like there's teva, there's nature, and then, you know, Hashem is separate. Adkan. And he says, that's the drasha. Tshuva. Says the Chacham Tzvi. Roa ani es divrei ha-chacham ha-meromeim v'na'ala. I see this exalted tam l'chacham. Shein divrei ha-kuzari v'maimar ha-rishon simen tesvav tezayin. What is everybody upset about? What he's saying is simply the words of Rav Yehuda HaLevi in the Kuzari, in the first section. U'mefarsho, and there is a commentary on the Kuzari by Rav Yehuda Muscato. And he says the same thing. Achri hatsos rabos ksav. And he gives a whole explanation over there. And he says, v'zeh loshon, he backs it up. And we're going to skip a few lines just for the sake of time. And he defends this as well. And he says, skip five lines down. He says, v'apir yo nimtia lechacham hadorish. And he says, I have to give credit to the rabbi who's speaking. She'im hayoso, yodea dasa filosofim orim v'teva ma'as bara, u'bachar batov tam v'das kadoshim divrei chasidim menu. What, he didn't do anything wrong. He says he's following our sages who say that nature is where God is found. I don't understand what everybody's complaining about. Vim chashu shedivrei hachacham hadorish hayu al teva haprati kagon chamos ha'eish v'lachos ha'mayim v'ratzu la'amis b'dvarav shemecham yuvan she'oso adavar ha'mechameim u'melachlech hu elokus. He says, maybe you think that he's saying is that, you know, when there's rain falling from the sky, like that's God. I'm like catching God in my hand. Or if it snows and I pick up snow from the ground, I'm holding a Kaddish Baruch Hu. He says, is that what you think he's saying? Do you think that God is physically found in nature? Zeu davar she'ein lach shod bo shum k'sil. Only a fool would think that. Ubar asher b'chol ha'kofrim sholom kol shekein chacham anavon b'im Hashem. He says, a kofer wouldn't even say that. That's ridiculous. Kol shekein, how much more so, a chacham, a talmid chacham who believes in Hashem, would never such a, believes in the Torah, that's not, no, then he wouldn't say such a crazy idea. V'im chashru shalom yitachem lachanos ma'is Hashem yisparach v'yisaleh b'shem teva. Maybe we shouldn't label Hashem's actions with the name Teva. V'chashru zeh l'giron b'kvodo shamakom yishtabach v'yisaleh. It's a knock on Hashem to say that, to call Hashem nature. Malahem kinezaku al hadorish v'karu acharav mila. Why are you guys talking against him? Hine harava gadol agoni adev v'chachmas v'chasidus. Rav Yishai HaLevi. V'shlah hakadosh. B'sifra mafursim shen luchos habris. Asher neskabo bi'ava b'chol tuus Yisrael. Everybody learns the shlah. Everybody learns his important sefer. Kasav b'tchila sifro. He writes in the beginning of his work, in the name of the Avodas HaKodesh, Asher Haya Rav Gadol Svardi, who was a great Svardic rabbi, who was a chassid and a great Talmid Chacham, whose work is also accepted in Klal Yisrael, Kischar Osei Mitzvos Hashem, V'onesh Ha'over Aleihem Heim Tiviyim. He says that reward and punishment that come from Hashem is nature. That's Teva. That's what it means. If I do a mitzvah and Hashem gives me reward in my life, that's teva, that's nature. And if I do an aveira and Hashem sends me a punishment, that's teva, that's nature. People who know Kabbalah will know this as well, that Hashem is found within nature and everything that goes on in the world is simply a covering for Hashem. And he says, "Ubaofin shetzricham anu lachzik tov lachacham hakola hamaromeim." He says, "We should be thanking Rav David Nieto al hadrasha shadarsh lizra'am to teach us about that drasha, to guide our hearts acharei dasa filusafim ma'omrim ateva." And so we shouldn't follow the philosophers who say that God is physically, you know, in nature. When I touch snow or rain, that I'm touching God. Kimi menu yatsu tiklos rabos. That could be very complicated and very big mistake for people. V'heir einehem b'munosenu, and he will light up our eyes and our faith. V'amina le yasher koach v'chilo. I'm going to give Rav David Nieto a yasher koach for his drasha. V'chol mahar acharav acharei ro devarenu. Eila choshani lo mechatas. And the people who are questioning, he says, are sinners. And he writes in the last paragraph, "Vim hayos kol elu dvarim barurim upshutim einam tzrichem chizak levatzal ka'orav tov." And he says these are such obvious things that nature is where we see Hashem's hashkach and running of the world. It doesn't need any chizak. Ratziti letzarefi mishnayim min hachacham. But he says maybe you don't trust me, so I'm going to have two other rabbis review my tshuva, tachachamim hamuvhakim shibiren, who also live in Altona. And they'll sign on it as well. V'achrei amasav amatzim iskamano. They agree to it. Shilishos aseinu al kol advar memurim lamala. And they agree what I said was emes v'tzedek, was righteous and truthful. And he signs on the day of the week Menachem. He signs on the 17th of Av, Tafsad Michei, in 1705. And he says Tzvi Ashkenazi here in Altona. And there you go. That's the Psak of the Chacham Tzvi that we just learned. And after the Psak of the Chacham Tzvi was sent to London, it was printed in a pamphlet, in Elul of 1705. I'm actually going to, can I share a screen for a second? I'm actually going to show you.
Do I have to give you the permission?
There we go. Okay. Everyone see this? This is the copy of the pamphlet. Decision del, and it goes on to explain the decision of, regarding a rabbi, Rav Tzvi Ashkenazi, regarding the problem of naturalism, of nature, and Dios, and God, it was all translated into Spanish in London, in Kislev, 5464, that's 1704, it's 1705, Elul 565, 5465. There's a picture of that guy planting the ground. I'm not sure what the connection is. Maybe it's to do with nature. Maybe he's planting a tree for Tu B'Shvat. I don't know. So this is the pamphlet. I'm happy to send out a copy to anybody who wants to see it. And it's not printed very well. It's also in Spanish and in old print. So you'd have to work on that. Here it is over here. And here is the Hebrew as well. Everything is divided up. There are actually a couple of paragraphs that did not make it into the tshuva because they weren't relevant. But this is the pamphlet itself. Okay. So let's go back to our discussion over here. The printing, as we said, was poor quality. There are a few sections, 15 sections, two additional points that aren't in the Tshuvas Chacham Tzvi. And at the beginning of the pamphlet, it writes that who sent the letter to the Chacham Tzvi, and it also includes the two signatures of the two rabbis that the Chacham Tzvi had signed on his psak. Now, this Tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi is very important. The Chida writes in his Shem HaGedolim, and he speaks of praise about Rav Dov Nieto and the events that we just discussed. Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson, in his Divrei Shaul, cites the Tshuvas of the Chacham Tzvi in a few places. In his Divrei Shaul, on the Agarata in Shas, in Maseches Tainis, he discusses the concept that the Gemara deals with, that there are three keys that open things in the world, that Hashem never gives those keys to a shaliach, Hashem does it himself. And the Divrei Shaul explains that the shaliach the Gemara refers to is nature. There are things that happen through natural course, and there are things in the world that Hashem overrides the natural course and does it himself. And he notes that the Gemara shows that the key to giving life, childbirth, is only done by Hashem. And he says the proof is that when Rachel became pregnant, the Torah says, Vayizkor Elokim es Rachel, Vayishma Aleha Elokim, Vayivtach es Rachma. That Hashem remembered Rachel, and he heard her, and he opened up her womb. And the Marsha asks, why isn't the Gemara bring a proof from the earlier pasuk, which says, "Vayar Hashem ki sanu aleha," that Leah was hated. Hashem saw that. "Vayiftach es rachman," he opened up her womb. So it also says Hashem opened up her womb. Why is the proof that Hashem brings life into this world from Rachel and not from Leah? So the Divrei Shaul explains that all acts of nature are really Hashem, who set up the natural order of the world, his hashkacha. And he supports this with the Tshuvas Chacham Tzvi. He explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it the teva, the nature of women, that they should not be barren. It is natural for a woman to have a child. And therefore, there is no proof from Leah that Hashem controls the keys to give life, because that is nature set up by Hashem, that Hashem put into motion. However, Rachel was an akara, she was barren. And therefore, it says, Ve'yivtach es rachma, Hashem opened her womb. Because giving a woman who is barren the ability to have a child is beyond teva. It's beyond nature. And Hashem has to set that up, and it requires the direct intervention of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why Yaakov tells Rachel, Hatachas Elokim Anochi, I am a son of God. Because only Hashem can fix the issues of a barren woman. And it cannot be solved by the natural teva that Hashem had previously set up in the world. In the Parshas Vezos HaBracha, he uses this approach to connect the end of the Torah to the beginning of the Torah. A heretic says that there's an independent power that exists in nature. However, we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates and constantly gives life to nature. And this is why the Gemara in Megillah says that when the 70 elders, Chachamim, translated the Torah for King Ptolemy, they didn't write Bereshis Bara Elokim, that was we would literally read it, Bereshis created God, right? Bereshis bara Elokim, Bereshis created God, because the Greeks felt that nature is the central power holding the world together, and God is something else. And therefore, the Chachma Yisrael wanted to be clear that we believe that Hashem created everything from the beginning of time. The gematria of Elokim is Teva, right? As we said before. And therefore, it can be read, they wrote the Pasuk, Elokim bara Bereshis, that God created in the beginning. And they noted as well, he notes as well, that the word Elohim can be Teva. So meaning Elohim created Teva. This connects to Le'enei Kol Yisrael, that Moshe did everything in the front of the eyes of the Jewish people. Because the Jewish people will always believe and see and know that Bereishis Bara Elohim, that Hashem created the nature of the world, and that Elohim and Teva, that Teva nature is really just a showing and display of God's power in running the world. So let's move on now to discuss some sources that support this idea. I brought for you over here a comment of the pre-tzaddik, Rav Tzadok HaKohen, in his Maimer on Pesach Memhei. And he writes as follows. He says, V'alzen amar v'yeir es halay, that Hashem lit the light. In this week's Parsha, in fact, that Hashem, so we have a little bit of Parsha as well. It says that Hashem lit the light, the night, when the Jewish people were seeing the Mitzrim approach. What does Hashem lit the light at night? There was light in the camp of Israel. It means that Hashem lit the hearts of the Jewish people with faith. But Poel ad lifnos haboker, to hold them over until the morning. Shenikba ha'amuna b'libam be'emes, that Hashem instilled emuna, belief and faith in God that was true. Ulezeh hutrach Hashem yisparach l'naheg, beruach kadim azah kol ha'layla. Why did Hashem need to have a wind, a strong wind blowing all night before the splitting of the sea? Halo imratza, if Hashem wanted, kavayachol, he could have, Hashem yisparach shivku amayim. Why didn't Hashem just go 1, 2, 3, split, and split the water? Why do we have to have the wind blowing and pushing it? You know, I think if we imagine for a moment, you know, kamo rega hapach yam liyabasha, as if there was like this blowing motion pushing the water to the side, you know, I think anybody of a certain time, their image of the splitting of the sea probably involves Charles and Heston and the Ten Commandments. So, right, you imagine this wind and the water moving to the side. Like, what's the point of the wind? Hashem should have just said split, and the water splits. Why did he do that? Says Rav Tzadok, Achayatzarech sheyukba emuna b'lev Yisrael shekol ma'isa bereisha slim b'maro. What Hashem was teaching Bnei Yisrael was that every single word, that every single action that happens in the world comes from Hashem. Ve'ein shum teva ba'olam zulas hanagas Hashem yisbach. There is no nature in the world that is not simply the revelation and the will of Hashem being manifest here. B'derech she'amar Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa teaches, Misha'amar l'shemen v'yidlok, yamen l'chometz v'yidlok. If Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa told his daughter, who mistakenly lit a fuel that would not burn over Shabbos, vinegar, and she was nervous that they wouldn't have light for Shabbos, she lit before Shabbos candles, he said, if Hashem allows oil to burn, Hashem can make vinegar burn. It doesn't make a difference to Hashem. Shehaya barur l'neged einav, that it was clear to the eyes of the Jewish people. Shein shum davar teva v'herga ba'olam, there is no nature that is simply regular run-of-the-mill that is separate from God. Rakmasha Hashem yisparach mashpia b'zeh, kocho v'teva b'chol eis uzman. Every single thing we see in the beauty and the destruction and the calm of nature is simply HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why it says, v'yeres halayla. The blowing of the wind at night was to teach Bnei Yisrael to open up their eyes, to enlighten their eyes and to see Hashem in nature and in all the amazing things we find around us and how Hashem runs the weather and our amazing, amazing planet. I want to bring an idea from Rav Kook. Rav Kook has a beautiful parish on the Siddur, in his Siddur Olas Ra'aya. And Rav Kook, certainly in Hebrew, can be difficult even for the experienced learner and certainly for a novice. I would recommend, I brought this here for us this evening just because I felt it would be easier to learn together. I brought here from a beautiful work that was recently done by Rabbi Betzal Naor, who's one of the foremost experts and teachers of Rav Kook's Torah, in which he made a Siddur with Conan Publications, which brings much of Rav Kook's parish on the Siddur in a beautiful and easy to understand English. If you are looking for an entryway, a way to learn about Rav Kook's Torah, and that's not too daunting and in an accessible manner, I think you'll find it here in his beautiful Siddur. I highly recommend it. Look at what he writes on the verse, Lecha Hashem HaGadula, that we recite in the Psukah de Zimra. He says, yours, Hashem, are greatness. This refers to the act of creation, Maaseh Bereishis. And it also says, he does great things beyond inquiry. Right? Oseh Gedolos, or he does great things. The works of creation lead us to the discovery that all of existence is one act, whose details are myriads of physical worlds without number, and a multitude of spiritual creations without end. We could sit here and never get to the end of all the amazing creations of this world, with all their causes, conditions, and aspects. They all bond together as one. And if we were able to behold the big picture of all existence, there would be revealed to us a single macroanthropos, one major thing that's running the whole world. And so it is fitting for the single Lord that all of his deeds should be amount, not to disjoint disparate sparks, but rather to braided torch of light. All the manifold details, each one of which amasses us with its awesomeness, bond together as limbs of a body, or as an awe-inspiring machine made up of infinitely many parts. All of nature speaks to one creator and tells us about Hashem. Even if man should be able to gather into his intellect a great portion of existence and should grasp the bond that holds together its specifics and forces, he would still be at a loss to solve the many riddles that would appear to him in the wisdom of creation. You could read National Geographic for the next 500 years and you're still not going to understand everything. For as much as he will increase his knowledge, so will increase the wonders upon wonders. Any doctor knows this. Any scientist knows this. The reason for this fact is that the solution to existence can only be had by complete understanding of its totality. For it is but one entity, and this is beyond any thinker or theoretician. We go from wonder to higher awareness. Those things that initially appeared to us as disjoint or disparate, before we knew their interrelation, will stand before us as great things, gedolos. But just when we imagine that we have before us the complete work of the master of the universe, that we have uncovered and mapped the human genome, that we understand even the smallest amount of a coronavirus, that we think we understand and grasp and have a hold on it, just when we think that our investigations have brought us to know the laws of existence and that we have solved some of the great riddle, even more astonishing wonders pile up until we decide we have not arrived at a complete picture. We have witnessed but a small portion of the works of the master of all, and are incapable of revealing all the laws of existence. So the great things are beyond inquiry. They're never going to understand everything, and that's the beauty of nature, says Rav Kook, that nature tells us that there is so much more than what we see. We're going to give one more Mari Makam about the importance of nature, and then I'm going to come to something practical, and we'll end with that. The Abarbanel has a parish on Pirkei Avos called the Nachlas Avos. In his opening piece, in the fifth perek, he makes the following comment. The Mishnah says that Hashem created the world Ba'asar Ma'amaros with 10 statements. Why did he create it with 10 statements? Why didn't he just do it in one? Because when the Rishayim destroy the world and they do things that ruin the world, and evil people ruin the world, they'll be punished even more so because Hashem put more effort into the world. What does that mean, says the Abarbanel? He says, let me give you a mashal. You want to build a house. You want to build a new house. There are two ways, says the Abarbanel, to build a house. You sign a check. You give it to the architect and the builder. You tell them, go build a house. I don't care what it looks like. Make it nice. Have a good time. Be creative. I'm sure it'll be fine. So with one statement, you tell the builders, go and build the house. That's one way to do it. But the second way is as follows. You buy Architectural Digest and Home and Gardens and HGTV magazine and all these magazines about how you're going to have special molding and colors and a new kitchen and the bedrooms are going to be done over here and the paintings and the colors and everything is going to be just right. Every single detail, the owner gets involved. Nothing is left up to chance. Aval yomar aleim asuli bais b'shir kach archa. It must be just this big. V'kach rachba and this wide. B'shir kach koma and this tall. V'asu cheder kach. And make the room like this. U'beseder kach. And just like this. Baruch roch v'gova kach. This high. U'pesach kach b'makom. And the door should be over here. Kach v'chalom kach. And the window should be over here. V'chein yeser ha'dvarim b'pratoeya mitzvah aleim b'ofen shabayish kulo yaseh b'tzir adon. It was all done by the statements and the direction of the master. Umitzvosev a process with his specific commands. Vein safek shabayis asher yubana ha'adam bazeh haderach hasheni. What is going to be the more beloved house? Which house do you care more about? It is obviously the second house. Tia yoser neheves v'nechbedes etzla. It will be more beloved. Why? Because it was ma'isi yadav lehispire. He glorified himself in the effort and time he put into this house. More than the first guy who just signed a check and said, build me a house. Hashem, his love and his desire for the completeness of the world. There are no intermediaries in the creation of this world. Every mountain, every river, every blade of grass, every drop of water, every human being that is here was not done with a middleman. The world was created because Hashem loved this world. And therefore, Avahu Yisparach Ba'atzmo, Lo Levada Habriya Rishona Yesh Me'ayin. It wasn't just that Hashem made the world Yesh Me'ayin. Aval Gam B'chol HaDvarim Shenasu Yesh Me'yesh, B'sheshes Me'abresha Yomer Vayehi. Every single part of this world, Hashem had an intimate and caring aspect in his building. Bepratios gadol behevdel midim kolech basman, every single piece, every single species, in the different types of lions, the different types of giraffes, the different types of elephants, the different types of ants, every single aspect of nature was ordained by God. V'zeo bli safek mor alavasos olam. And it shows Hashem's love for the world. Moshe adam chafetz b'ma'asav al derech mash amar. Just like you love things that you build. Right now with my kids, I'm working on a 1,000-piece puzzle. When it's done, I'm going to be so happy. What am I going to do with it? I don't know. Maybe I'll tell myself I'll do something special with it and put it on the wall, but I probably won't. I'll probably break it up and put it in the box like everybody else. But when you build something special with your hands, you love it. You care about it. Same with Hashem in this world. This world is a place where we see Hashem's love for us, and Hashem wants to connect to us as well. And therefore he goes on to say, a Rasha who destroys this world, whether it be spiritually, whether it be physically, when a person destroys nature and causes this world to be damaged in its physical sense and its spiritual sense, it's not just somebody's house. It's Hashem's house. It's a house that Hashem put time, care, effort, and love into. And this is not a stump speech about, yes, global warming, not global warming, saving the whales, hugging trees, whatever it may be. But Hashem put us in this world, and he gave us a beautiful world with amazing natural things here to show him, because he loved us and he wanted us to have a beautiful world. And anything we do to damage that world is a slap in the face to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we can't appreciate the loving building, the loving house that he created for us. So let's talk for a moment, 2 points we want to bring out and we want to conclude with. What can we do to increase our appreciation of Avas Hashem, of nature, and to become better observers of nature and Hashem in this world, as our Rebbe, Rav Dov Nieto, wanted us to learn? So I think that many of us are familiar with a statement that is brought in the name of Shimon Shmuel Fal Hirsch. That Rav Hirsch was once going to visit the Swiss Alps, and someone said, why are you taking time off? And he said, because at one point I'm going to go to Shemayim, and Hashem is going to say to me, Shamshin, did you see my Alps? My beautiful Alps I made for you, and I want to see the beauty of that. Now that's an apocryphal story that may or may not have taken place. But what I can show you is an essay that Rav Hirsch wrote himself in his own hand, which is in the collected writings of Rav Samson Rafael Hirsch, volume 8, page 259. It's not clear why this was written. Apparently he was on some trip, some safari, some sort of journey somewhere. And listen to this amazing, and please read with me, this amazing essay that Rav Hirsch wrote, just for a few minutes. He says, I almost believe that all you homebodies would one day have to atone for your staying indoors And when you would desire entrance to see the marvels of heaven, they would ask you, did you see the marvels of God's earth? Then ashamed you would mumble, we missed that opportunity. How different were our rabbis in this respect, how they breathed and felt, thought and lived in God's marvelous nature, how they wanted to awaken our senses for all that is sublime and beautiful in creation, how they wanted to teach us to fashion a wreath of adoration for God out of the morning's rays and the evening blush, out of daylight and the night of shadows, out of the stars' glimmer and the flower scent, out of the roar of the sea and the rumble of the thunder, the flash of the lightning, how they wanted to demonstrate to us that every creature was a preacher of his power, a monitor of our duties. What a divine revelation they made of the book of nature. Now, that is an amazing paragraph. I'm going to read more in a second. Just keep in mind, it was originally written in German and translated into English, but it is beautiful in the English, and I'm sure the German was just fine. Did you ever complete the hymn of the light with Vasikin, bathed in the sea of light of the awakening day with the rising of the sun globe? Did you turn towards the sun of your life, your God, dedicating your whole being and existence, your actions and your will to his altar? Did you ever pray to him whose power and omnipotence fills the worlds when you were exposed to the roar of the ocean's waves or the roll of the thunder on a mountain summit? In the stillness of a star-studded night on a lonely hill, did you ever pray to him? Who brings on the evenings and assigns the stars of the celestial watch? How different is Shekocho Ugvuraso Male Olam, the Asher Bidvaro Ma'ariv Aravim, the Yoser Or Uvore Choshech, if spoken in God's free nature than in the narrow confines of our street prisons? How could you sense in the whole splendor of the marvelous language? How could you think of a more majestic words of the greetings for the thunder than Shekocho Gvuraso Maliolam, the whole lovely eventide song of Shebedvara Mariva Ravim, or a friendlier greeting of the morning than the soul awakening Yotzer Or of Ore Choshech? Come out into the open if you want to appreciate the whole depth, the fullness of things and beings as depicted by our language roots. Nature speaks with its gentle transitions. Erev, the disappearance of outlines, its mixing of form, its peaceful melting together when the evening comes. And Boker, when all the objects are disentangled from the night's embrace and separately present themselves for recognition and testing. Harim are the progenitors of the earthly life, and Achav is the meadow, the site for the mutual coexistence of the multitude of the united families of plants on the motherly lap of the earth. Says Rav Hirsch, step one in seeing Hashem in nature is get outside and appreciate nature. Go on trips, go on walks, go hiking, go see Hashem's sights throughout the world. If you have the opportunity, the funds, and the time, go explore and see beautiful things. It's Avodas Hashem. Says Rav Hirsch, it's a fulfillment of getting connected to Hashem. It'll change your davening. It will change your perspective to see beautiful things that speak to Hashem's glory and power. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Yisori HaTorah that one comes to Avas Hashem by experiencing and learning about nature. In the Mor Nevuchim in the third shar, he adds that learning about nature is a key of fulfillment of the mitzvah of V'yahavta as Hashem Elokecha. And that's number one. Number two, I would recommend the studying of the Chovas Halavavos Shar HaBechina. In the section of seeing Hashem in this world, the Chovas Halavavos gives so many beautiful pieces of advice of how to see and experience God in this world, to learn about nature, to learn science, to experience in your own way all of the beautiful mysteries of the world by sitting and watching, reading and studying, and seeing Hashem's power and hand in everything that we do. So in conclusion, we learned a tremendous lesson from our Rebbe, Rav Dovid Nieto. And after the printing of the Psak Din, the Machlokas quieted down from Dovid Nieto. It all stopped any opposition to the rabbi going forward. During Aseret Simei Tshuva, a month later, he put the matter to rest and preached Shalom to everyone and for everyone in the community. He would eventually pass away on the 28th of Teves, 1728, after serving his community for 25 more peaceful, wonderful years. Thank you, everybody. It was a pleasure learning with you this evening. And everyone should have a wonderful Tu B'Shvat and get out there and experience nature to the best of our abilities.